I'm Susie, and I'm an alcoholic. And it is my pleasure to be here tonight and, you know, be of service. And I hope that, you know, what I share tonight will reach out to some of you. Because it took me 2 years to hear my story in AA, my story from a woman. I'll tell you a little bit about how it went here. I'll just go ahead and hop right into it. It's funny, I was talking to John and telling him how I've never prepared for a speaker's meeting. And then after I hung up the phone, I started preparing for the meeting. I'm glad I did. My God, there's so many of you. But the only reason I do is because, you know, I get off on serious tangents. So if I get off on a tangent, you guys can just nod your head and it'll kind of get me back on track. But it's so funny. I've been in the program since 1989. And I'm getting ready to move right now, making a big life change. And I was going through all these boxes. And I had this opportunity to run into all kinds of crazy shit. And I ran into this DUI, alcoholic education program certification that I got. I thought I'd bring that and show it to you. Susie, that's my name. Susan, when I was in real big trouble with my mother. And it's just hilarious because it was in 1985, and that is when I really started having some serious problems with alcohol. And I did not quit drinking for 4 years. And even then, you'll hear in my story, you know, the struggles I suffered. So, anyway, I think that's kind of funny. But when I was a young tyke, 12 or 13, my parents were going to teach us to drink like regular people, right? We're brought up in the great state of Utah with the predominant religion here, and they're going to, you know, show us how to have a glass of wine on New Year's. Well, I went to go do that, and I had that first glass of wine and got this kind of moving feeling and went, oh, shit, this is good, you know? And then I just went back for more and more to the fridge, you know? And pretty soon I'm walking over to 7-Eleven and I'm elevated off the ground getting a chocolate donut, you know? And I'm like, woo, go back for more, you know? And pretty soon, you know, I'm passed out, blacked out, drunk. The only reason I know I was blacked out is that they had pictures of me, you know, ringing the bell at midnight, you know, and this is after I, you know, vomited all over myself, and so that was my first story. It took me a whole nother year before I did the same thing at 13 at my dad's. He had a keg, and his wife was from, you know, she did some time in South Africa, you know, just studying, and we drank shandies, which is beer and 7-Up. Can you imagine that combination? So I repeated my same behavior that I did the year before, and it scared the shit out of me. You know, it really did. It really bothered me. And so when I went into high school, and I just decided that I wasn't going to be one of those people. I just didn't want to do it. And my brother, he was a total partier, drug head. You know, my half-sister had gotten pregnant because she was on drugs and alcohol and you know, had been taken advantage of. And so I was like, I am not going to do this. So that's my beginning. You know, in high school, I was just a good girl. I got good grades. I was active. I was involved. Very athletic. Always very athletic. And by the time the end of my senior year, I was getting high. I got high one time with the cheerleaders when we were at a basketball game. You know, I was a cheerleader too, by the way. And I didn't just get high with them. You know, so, and I remember thinking, oh my God, you know, what am I doing? So, you know, pot is not my drug of choice. Alcohol is my drug of choice. But my senior year, I started drinking pretty good with the boys and compromising my integrity. And I had a lot of it, I want you to know, because I'm, you know, a good girl from Utah, and I don't do those sorts of things. And here I was doing those sorts of things. And I realized that it had something to do with the alcohol. So, I get into college, and I'm rebelling against the predominant religion, and I'm rebelling against all those people that, you know, think you're bad when you smoke, drink, and party. And I just, you know, Katie bar the door. I'm drinking. I'm snorting. Speed with the alcohol to keep myself so that I don't, you know, pass out like I always do. And I just started doing that kind of stuff with my girlfriends. I became a member of a sorority, and it was one big party. I quit. I was a ballet major when I started. And then I quit dancing. I wanted to go to beer club and hang out with boys, and that was just it. You know, I was off and running, and I just drank for 6 years. And we did, I say we. Well, I'll tell you, I was a bouncer. My poor girlfriends, you know, we did mushrooms, LSD, cocaine. So drugs are part of my story, but I am a real alcoholic. Alcohol is my drug of choice. And but my girlfriends used to get a little disturbed because I'd just bounce. You know, I'd just leave, and they couldn't find me. And so, I'd wake up. Like, this is what happened to me one time. I'm up in the high avenues at this big old party, and, you know, smoked a little pot, drank brandy earlier at the game, you know, and pretty soon, and I'm with this really hot guy that I really like, and, oh, So we're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I come to by myself on the grass lawn in the backyard. And then I wander through the house, and there are just bodies everywhere of drunk people, right? So I really couldn't have a problem, right? Because everybody's drunk and passed out. But, you know, I had to get back home. And that, I lived down on 3rd South, and this is the High Avenues, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm a vampire with my clothes on from the night before, you know, walking down the street. I get home. I can't get into my house. I sleep in the laundry room. This is the kind of shit that I did. So anyway, not to go on with my story too long. I have a really long story. But anyway, that was college. I kept thinking, wow, you know, I don't know. I think there might be something wrong with me. I can't drink like everybody else, you know. So anyway, the other thing that was a problem is I never knew. It was a crapshoot. Every time I drank, I did not know when I was going to black out. You know, because sometimes I had success. And this is the progressiveness of the disease for me anyway. And they say for we women, we often have a shorter period of time that the disease takes hold. I mean, I drank real seriously for 11 years. And my disease went from being a total lightweight to having a few, you know, like a couple years in there where I could have 10 or 12 drinks, you know. And I thought maybe, and I wouldn't maybe black out that night, you know. I could actually wake up and remember what I did. And then I went on to this place where I would drink really heavily, and the next day I'd try to drink to get rid of the hangover, and I wouldn't even get drunk. And I don't know if any of you guys have experienced that, but you know, that's what it was for. I was like, oh my God, I can't get rid of this pain. I really want to drink. I'm drinking a shot of tequila down in Ensenada after this crazy party in, you know, we were in California somewhere, and you know, I'm doing a shot of tequila, and it goes down, and it comes back up. And I try and I take it back down, and I'm turning green, and you know, and all night it was like that for me, you know. So I just couldn't do it. So I started to really get concerned about it, because I just couldn't, I couldn't handle my booze. I could black out after 2 glasses of wine, you know. And again, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why can't I drink and party like everybody else? So anyway, onward and upward, DUI in 1985. Vicious Rumors, if any of you remember the place. Sushi and, you know, like Dom Perignon and what were we drinking? Grand Marnier. Oh, yeah, that's a great hangover. I'm driving down the street, taking a left-hand turn out of the right-hand lane in front of the, what is it? Was it the, remember the New Orleans Cafe? And I get thrown in, I get in big-ass trouble because I am very drunk. And so the guy handcuffs me, throws me in jail. I get fingerprinted, strip searched, mug shots. I'm in and out of a blackout the whole time. Okay, this isn't normal drinking, really, is it? You know, and I was told too that, you know, when you don't question it. You know, if you're not an alcoholic, you don't think you are. You know, and when you have blackouts, you don't get drunk again. And I just kept doing it, you know. So it was just kind of beating my head up against the wall. And I was really into being a part of the group, and I had a difficult time saying no to any drugs or alcohol because I really wanted you to like me and I wanted to fit in and all that good stuff. So it was a very big deal to me. Again, I just didn't know what was wrong with me. So I graduated from college. It was a fucking miracle. Sorry, in the Christian Center here. And with a C-plus average, woo! I can't even believe it. But I'm a persevering tyke, and persistent as can be. But I got married to a fellow alcoholic. And we were a mess. We had no money. We were partying all the time. We did have fun. I worked up at Snowbird, and that was a prerequisite if you worked there that you had to drink and do drugs. And so I was a manager up there and did a lot of that, blacked out, lost my keys, you know, all of the above. You know, my drinking just escalated at that point, and I continued to have more and more blackouts. That's where I had the 2 glasses of wine. I'm like, well, I only had 2 glasses of wine. And somebody said, well, Susie, my God, you had like margaritas. And you know, then you took your cowboy boot out and you opened that bottle of wine with your boot, you know, and then we drank wine. I'm like, that was always the most surprising thing, is that I would hear my story the next day through all of my friends. And, you know, I'd always kind of listen and go, oh, really? What did he say? You know, kind of try to probe him to get the answers. And all the time, you know, I don't know if you guys can relate, but you know, that just that empty, just black, scared, you know, just that feeling of just incomprehensible demoralization, you know. It was ugly, and And when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't think I fit here. And so I love, you know, Tradition 3, because the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. And if I have to compare or compete with any of you on my alcohol story, which one of my sponsors said, "Susie, I didn't do half the shit you did, okay, I'm here." You know, I might not be here. That's what I'm telling you. There's a long line of alcoholism in my family. My granddad was a good, solid worker, never missed a day of work in his life, and he died of cirrhosis of the liver and emphysema. My grandfather on the other side was a binge drinker, and my dad has smoked pot since 1960. To this day, still does. And my brother's a binge drinker like I was. That's my story, is I was a binge drinker, and then I'd be like, oh my God, I've got to repair myself and take care of myself. I'm never going to do this again. And then I'd be out there doing it on Thursday night. So during my stint at Snowbird, you know, after this, I had a DUI already. I'm coming down the mountain and I have a fender bender and I'm completely loaded, and the person I ran into was loaded and we were all loaded. I think there were three cars, and so we didn't call the police, but at that time I kind of went, oh my God, I've got a problem. And so I picked up a book called Adult Grandchildren of Alcoholics, you know, because my grandfather's had this problem. You know, my dad was a pot smoker, and my mom was just an insufferable Al-Anon, completely organized, amazingly successful, you know, and she just, it was just a control freak. So you can imagine, you know, this has been difficult for me. So anyway, my dad would do things. My dad was an occasional binge drinker, too, and, like, he did things like swallow his bridge, you know, and he was drunk. So you know, I didn't have to look far. And when I did finally read this was 21 years ago. You know, I haven't been drunk in 21 years. But in my story, you'll see a little bit further why I have a date of I'm 11 years sober today. But anyway, so, you know, all these light bulbs were going off, and I thought, oh, shit, I've got a problem, and I really don't want to be having this problem. But anyway, I continue to drink, and I'm kind of obsessive and compulsive, and, but in my eyes, at the time, when I was married to my husband, I just thought, we are losers. Our friends are all they're becoming successful, they're launching careers, they have houses, and we are snorting cocaine and doing shots and playing darts down at Lumpy's. And it was just awful. So he goes off and he gets this DUI, and he's part of my story. So if you're going to run out and tell him I'm talking about him, then people do that, you know, and I don't appreciate it. Because, you know, I love the guy. He's a good man. But anyway, he went off and got a DUI. And so we had to go to counseling. And the funny thing was I thought, you know, I've got to get myself some help. I just can't deal with this man. And, you know, if he'd just get sober, then our life would get better. And we could both launch our careers. And I'd quit doing cocaine. And I'd quit playing darts at Lumpy's and doing shots. I'm sure of it, you know. So I went out to get myself some help. And I ran off to an Al-Anon meeting. And when I got to that Al-Anon meeting, I found out it was an AA meeting. You know, spirit works in mysterious ways. And it was a great conduit for me that night. I sat down in a meeting and I started to hear a 250-pound black man tell his story. He'd just been out of prison. He was talking about being imprisoned and being miserable with his disease and how it trapped him and kept him unproductive, you know. And I just looked at the man and I related to him immediately. And I remember, you know, being locked in my bedroom with these hangovers, or worse yet, drinking and doing cocaine until all hours of the morning, and, you know, hearing the birds sing and hating them, wanting to shoot little motherfuckers, you know. And seeing the people out there jogging and running, and they're just all, you know, woo, you know, and I'm just looking at them going, oh, you're miserable suckers, look at you, there's a grimace on your face, I can see it, you know. And I was just so full of what, you know, I mean, judgment and envy and, you know, all the seven deadly sins. So that's the deal there. When that DUI came, I found out, I just went, shit, I went to that meeting, I'm an alcoholic. That's my problem. And all those weird feelings, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong, you know, looking at my grandparents, you know, and knowing that that was me. I got it. I'm an alcoholic. So okay, I'm going on with my notes here. How are we doing for time? Am I doing okay? So anyway, what I did is I went back and I decided to, well, I didn't go back. I decided to get sober. And I stayed sober for 30 days. That was in August of 1989. And I went back to a work meeting, and tried to do some controlled drinking that we talk about in chapter 3. And as soon as I tried to, I went all week without drinking because it was a big work event and I didn't want to really destroy my reputation. But what ended up happening is I was just going to have one Beck's beer. I think it was a Beck's, and then a million Coronas later, I'm doing backflips off the pool, you know, the little handrails, and my swimming suit's twisted sideways, and I'm like, oh, embarrassing myself. Clearly, I walk into the, you know, I get up the next time, I'm like, oh, and everybody's like, Susie, we need to come around, you know, that was so much fun last night, and they start telling me what we did. So that's how my controlled drinking went. It went like that. So I know this. And at this time, I launched into the program. I got involved in NA upon a therapist's recommendation because ism is part of the disease, and it takes forms, as we were talking about. We don't need to represent ourselves as all these different things. We have a disease that has an ism, and it can be anything, and I have that problem. You know, I like to clean my kitchen far too much, you know, and it's not because, you know, it's good for my hands or, you know, it's just compulsive. So anyway, I launched into the program. I got involved in AA. I started doing service. I was a secretary for Highland Ridge when it was up on Highland Drive. And it was an NA meeting, and I learned so many basic skills in the program. And then I got involved in women's meetings, tons of them. And I met my first sponsor that I never really worked with, but she made me do a first step. And she said, Susie, I want you to do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And you talk about the good. Don't you forget it. And keep bringing it up, because it's important that you remember those good times, because that's when you're going to want to drink, you know. It's not just the bad times. So I did a really effective first step, and I just never shared it with her, you know. And I decided that I was definitely into the ism. I sponsor myself. And I read all the book. I read it, you know, backwards and forwards, and I was going to do it my way. So I think we were talking about that earlier. I'm a rebel, too, and I sure as hell didn't want you to know that I didn't have my shit together, okay, because I might not be able to pick it up all at once, but it was all in a pile. And so anyway, you know, I went for, this is the crazy thing, is I thought I was a high bottom drunk, and I did this great meeting. It's called the Fresh Air Serenity Seekers meeting. It's a noon meeting if you ever get there. It's awesome. I love it. It's just so near and dear to my heart. But that meeting, they read chapter 3 every day, more about alcoholism, you know, all the ways we try to say we're not this. And I used to listen to all the old guys, and they'd say to me, Susie, you know, you're eligible too to go all the way down to the bottom, you know, and what is that going to be for you? Do you need to go that far? And, you know, so I heard so many good things, you know, during this time. But in the meantime, while I'm staying sober, I'm becoming wildly successful at work, okay? I'm like launching my career. I'm making more money than I've ever thought possible. And by the way, I thought money was going to solve everything, because, you know, isn't it supposed to? Shouldn't you arrive then? And don't people find you socially more acceptable? And it's just like all these crazy shit that you think about that I'm still suffering through and getting over. But anyway, I was really succeeding. I had two beautiful daughters, and by the way, they've never seen me drunk. One of them's almost 16 the end of this month, and an 18-year-old. And they swear I don't have this disease, because they don't know. They've never seen it, you know. They didn't see it when their father took me in my little gown and threw me over his shoulder as I'm throwing up and my breasts falling out the top, you know. That's the kind of date I was, you know. So, but Mom, you don't have a problem. Okay, so anyway, you know, so what happened is I had this great success. I had these beautiful girls. I was swimming through life and enjoying it. And my ex, now ex-husband, started smoking pot, and you know, he started playing around with all this stuff, and I went to a counselor, and my counselor was in the program too, and you know him, Sarah, and he said to me, well, Susie, you know what? If it doesn't affect your life, then it's not. Don't worry about it. So I didn't. You know, I just kind of went on my way, and he did his thing, and I kind of did my thing, and we raised our girls, and we did a lot of separate time. You know, he was away probably 3 or 4 days a week, and I was alone with the girls, and then he'd come home. But what ended up happening is that, you know, the monkey jumped on my shoulder one day, and we had friends that drank all the time. And this is after 8 years of sobriety and all the beautiful things that were going on in my life, that said, oh, Susie, you know, why don't you have a glass of wine? They left that bottle of wine. In fact, make some spaghetti sauce and pour a little glass of wine, and let's just check it out. And this is the happy time that I'm talking about, you know, woohoo, let's go have a drink. So I have one sip of this, you know, wine, and it goes down, and it's like, you know how it's warm, and it kind of spreads out across your chest, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I can't do this. You know, that's not right. But that was the first. You know, that was the first taste. I didn't get drunk. The next time, it was a friend's hot wine party, and they made some special wine for me that was non-alcoholic, and what did I do? I had a glass of the alcoholic wine, and then, you know, I'd only had one, and I got that warm feeling again, you know, and I was just, I'm screwing with myself badly, okay, because I know how I black out, and I know how I lose complete control, and how it's a crapshoot, you know, after two. So anyway, it sounds really crazy, but I've had people say that they understood my story, and some of you might, I know. So anyway, the next time it's a bachelorette party, a little sip of champagne, half a little sip of, you know, Goldschlager, and I'm still thinking, I went to the Women's International Conference at 9 years, and I had been screwing around with my sobriety. And when I finally screwed it up is that my girlfriends, we went to Lake Powell with our families, and my girlfriends were like, Susie, you never had trouble with pot. And it's like, no, because I hate it. It makes me paranoid. So what did I do? I smoked it, of course, you know, and I got high. Perfectly legitimate reason for me to reset my sobriety date, and that's why I did reset my sobriety date. But I'll tell you what happened right then. I was fooling around with all of this stuff, and I found out that my ex-husband was smoking cocaine. And all that money that I'd put in the bank for retirement and the kids' college was gone. And I'm telling you what, we put 30% of our money away, and it was a lot of money. And I was in shock, you know, and I was freaked out, and my life spun away. And I ran right back here, and I jumped into this program absolutely full tilt. And you guys have never let me down since. And I thought to myself at that time, you know, if I stay sober, I can do anything. And I took those two little girls, and for 2 years, we went through hell. I was out on the road traveling at the time, because I'd quit my other job, the one I made lots of money at, so that I could stay at home with my kids and just do this other thing on the side. But I had to quit all my jobs, and I came back home, and I just started taking care of the girls. And we started having fun. I launched into this program, and a few names I'll mention is Debbie C. and Joni A. and Carol O. and my now sponsor that I could still consider my sponsor, Becky, and my second sponsor, Kathy. And I've got a world and a circle of women around me that hold me up like nobody's business. I mean, it is just amazing. So what they told me is, they said, Susie, we're gonna save your ass, and you don't get to be a victim anymore. And all this sad, silly shit that you've got to say about everything that's gone on in your life, and all the money that's gone, and, you know, your poor husband who relapsed, well, get rid of it, you know? Come on, you know, pull your little bootstraps up and let's go to work. So I started doing the steps. By the way, I didn't do the steps for 8 years, and I stayed sober the first time, but I got drunk again. So it's been 11 now, and I've done the steps many times, and I've worked with many women, and it is an absolute gift from God, you know, and I don't label God as male, and I don't label it as Christian. It's too big, and it's too roomy, and if you read the literature, it's all-encompassing. It's awesome. So I would suggest, you know, to anybody, just based on my experience, is that the more I got into the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and that big book, the more that my world unfolded, and the less I had any sort of pissed offness about you and your perspectives, because they were just yours. I got to have my own. And I just didn't do as much of that. Now, I still go to meetings, and I go, oh, my God, I can't stand. Oh, God, can you believe it? Jesus. Ah, you know, and then I remember, this is what I get to learn, patience, tolerance, and kindliness. You know, those are those character assets that we have if we build them and we start to grow them. I will say that my ex-husband got sober after 2 years, and we lived 7 years of the most amazing time in AA, with definite challenges, but we raised our girls until almost grown, and we had some wonderful years together. And We were really actively involved in a recovery house called The Haven, and that saved my life too. We water ski, snow ski, well, whatever. We boat, we Christmas, we do all these fundraisers and wonderful things together, and that's when sobriety took hold for me, is when I expanded it out into my life, and I started hooking elbows with all of you and loving you. Loving you for who you were, not who I thought you ought to be, and not disliking you for all of your quirks and jerks, right? because your quirks and jerks are really mine. And I learned that in this program, that those are mirrors for me. Some bugs the shit out of me about you, I need to take a look at it, almost always. And so, anyway, we had 7 great years together, some of the happiest days of our life. We were divorced 2 years ago, and it's been a very, it's been a challenging time. I'm not going to lie, man. I'll tell you what, I've got tremendous optimism. I don't know where it came from, but I've had it my whole life. I just feel blessed that I believe and that I'm connected to my source every day. My former husband, he relapsed during this time, and it absolutely crushed me, and it was just an awful thing, because this disease kills people, and it kills families, and it hurts people so badly, and I hate to see it, but I'm glad I'm sober, and I'm glad you're sober today. That's the big deal right there. And if we can't grovel and judge, that's what I learned in this program. We all have a seat here. We earned it, and it doesn't matter how high or low your bottom is. You belong here. If you have a desire to stop drinking, that's a big fucking deal, because nobody can take your seat away, And I come from a group too. One of my home groups downtown in Salt Lake is called It's City at 7. That's a real crazy, wild bunch of people. For those of you who've been in attendance, we were actually at a meeting one night, and I'll never forget it, because when I came back into the program, that became one of my home groups upon my therapist's recommendation, and it was so cool. Well, anyway, we're sitting here at this meeting, and this guy comes in, and he says, "I'm just here to tell you all that AA doesn't work. It sucks. And I like to drink. And don't tell me not to drink, And he's holding this stuff, and he's got this trench coat on, and I'm a little nervous, like this, And he opens up his coat, and he's got this vodka. This stuff, it serves me well. I don't know if any of you were there at that meeting. Oh my God, And I remember, I think Larry Horton was there, or Larry H. Anyway, I remember, I think he said, thank you for sharing, and that's what we do in AA. We don't shoot our people, that come in, and we love them out. We love them right up and out, and he walked out, and I swear to God, I saw him on the streets in Denver at a training months later, and it was the weirdest thing ever. It's just bizarre how life is. I think that the thing that is so important are these funny little statements. I'm just going to read them to you. It's pause when agitated. This too shall pass. Only constant is the only thing that's constant is change. What gets me sober might get you drunk. See the people who carry the higher power's message. They're not people that are likely. I mean, I have seen people that have channeled my higher power to me. It's crazy. We have nothing in common. We're people that wouldn't mix. I go to Sweat Lodge with a guy, Dave, in the program. Fucking Dave, if some of you guys might know him. He's a cowboy. And, that guy, I get along with him. We're soulmates, I swear, And so don't miss the people that need to come into your life to change it for you, because they're not dressed the way you think they ought to be, At least they weren't for me. Of course, I've got some problems there, I'm sure. But again, I love this part, keep the best and leave the rest. See the similarities and not the differences. We're people who wouldn't normally mix. We're all here because we're not all here, so be careful. You think you've got this great person on your side, or you're sponsoring someone, and they turn into a crazy motherfucker, and you're like, oh my God, you need to leave right now. But, and then there's some other stronger person in AA who's very, qualified to take care of that one, and that's the way we work around here. We work as a team. We hook elbows. And, You know, I love that this is a spiritual program, not a religious program, because I would never be here. When I first came in and you guys were talking about God, I'm going to shoot you. Because I've had this rhetoric shoved down my throat and down my ass for years. And it made me feel bad and not good enough. And I don't want to do that anymore. And I don't today. I'll tell you what it's like today. I have two women I consider my sponsors. As I mentioned, I could call up to six to ten women at the drop of a hat. They take my call, and I call them regularly. If I'm going through crisis, I absolutely start dialing and start leaving messages, and I'll be goddamned, they all call me back. You know, even if it's a couple of days later. I run, I bike, I yoga, I ski, both water and snow, and I don't, and I'm the one that's grimacing out there when I'm running now. And spirit works in my life, and it reminds me that I'm an alcoholic. Here's three things that have happened to me just recently that are pretty important, and they remind me that, you know, where I can be and what I can do. First of all, I went to this great party it was a year ago, and I walk in, and I'm so together, you know, I'm sober, and I've got my ass in gear, and I've got a good career, and I make good money, you know, and all this stuff that's so important, and I walk into this party, and I see this guy I haven't seen in like 20-something years, it's probably been 22 years, and I go into the party, and he looks straight at me and goes, "Susie Wheeler, you threw up in my car! Oh my God! What are you doing?" And I'm like, well, obviously I'm not drinking, you know. So he felt really bad after I told him that. No. Anyway, you know, that's like, okay, yeah. I didn't even remember throwing up in his car, okay? I didn't like him for some reason, though. Maybe it was because he was mad at me because I threw up in his car. But another thing that happened is I was talking to a friend of mine just this summer. She's a dear roommate of mine, and, you know, we lived together in this crazy house where we did mushrooms and had big, you know, beer parties and stuff like that. Anyway, so I go and I'm talking to her. She says, well, tell me about the disease. You know, tell me about what's going on. And so I go on to tell her about, you know, what's the deal is with me and why I can't drink, you know, because she didn't really get it. And she was my roommate, okay? And I said, well, you know, I just bounce around and I'd get lost and stuff, Patrice. And she goes, that's funny. You know, I remember one day I saw you walking away from the football stadium and you're just wandering up the street by yourself, you know, and the game's still going. And she said, so I picked you up and I took you home. And, you know, and I don't remember that. You know, I don't remember those things, you know. And I'm the one that always is out there when I'm on vacation or something like that. And I'm the one that see the two people over there in the corner trying to get, you know, trying to screw. They're over there on the beach trying to get it on, and they're so drunk, and they're like, oh, you know, and my daughter and my ex-husband and my other daughter, they're not noticing. They're over on the beach. They're looking at the cute sand sculptures, you know, and it's like, why do I see this stuff, you know? Why? You know, I'm not a voyeur. I don't want to see it. And then another thing that I saw that was a very sad thing, this happened a long time, and this was a number of years ago, but these are the sorts of things that happen all the time. Whatever city I went into, you know, when I traveled a lot with business to Seattle and into Chicago and San Francisco and LA, but I was in, I was just here in Salt Lake, driving home from work one day, past Pioneer Park, and I saw this little Indian woman, and she was standing straight up and fell straight down on her face. There was absolutely no bodily control whatsoever. She just fell straight down. And the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, but for the grace of God. Because when I got drunk and did those things, you know, I went to parties and stripped down to my lace underwear and bra and went swimming with everybody and then, you know, took my friend's hand and rolled down the driveway. You know, and these are the things that I did, you know. So those are the reminders of, you know, that I'm not a regular drinker. I'll tell you what, I've worked the steps completely. They have absolutely changed my life. I've opened myself up. I read a great book, you know, that my sponsor told me to read. And I'm trying to think right now. It's the Beatitudes and what was it called? You know the guy, don't you? Emmett Fox, yeah. That's exactly, huh? Sermon on the Mount, thank you. I don't like that kind of stuff, okay? It talks too much about God. But after I did my steps with Becky, she said, Susie, I want you to read this book. And it just opened me up that much further. And I find that the more I'm in the program, the more expansive I become with spirit. And I'm okay with your ideas. I'm okay with my ideas. And I know sometimes your ideas think that I should be a certain way, and that's okay, because I'm not going to be that way. But, you know, I get it today. And again, my God is not male, it's not Christian, it absolutely works in my life, it's roomy, it's flexible, it supports me in the good and the bad. And I'm telling you, I have choice that I make today. And they say it in our book, you know, faith without works is dead. You know, you hear too many people come in, well, and here I am judging, sorry, you know, this too shall pass. But they go, well, you know, God's in charge, you know? It's like, yeah, but you have to do the footwork. You know, we have to get busy in this program. We have to write. We have to look at the character defects. You know, I do. I do, and then I have a chance at survival. I have a chance of growing. I have a chance of loving and being compassionate, you know. And even when I'm the biggest jerk of all, because I am regularly, you know, I'm a recent divorcee, so I have a lot of faults, but I've learned to be, you know, soft in my heart. And really allow the compassion to come in, and I've learned to have compassion for myself, you know, and that means accepting all my flaws, and you know, and embracing those flaws, and then turning around and going, Jesus, Suze, you know what? You are a tough little motherfucker, you know? Thank you for my strengths. Thank you for that. I get by. I mean, it's incredible. Perseverance and persistence, you know, it prevails when all else fails, right? But you have to be careful with that one, too, because as I've said before, you know, I hang on, and they say let go or be dragged, and I'm the queen of drag. And I've talked about that before. Because I think I'm really trying hard, you know, and it's ridiculous. We need to learn to let go and surrender. And it's so cool how things happen in your life. How am I doing on time? Can you just tell me? Oh, good. Okay, we're good. So anyway, there was a really cool thing. I've been struggling some lately with, you know, my own power issues and control. And then I've got some character defects. Do you guys have any of those? Mine keep resurfacing, you know. And the cool thing is that what I know about character defects is that, you know, they don't go away. You know, they can come into balance, and they can you know, work for you, and they can become assets, you know, but they don't go away. And so when you get really vulnerable, and you get really bitchy, and you get really, you know, angry at someone because they done you wrong, you know, it's time to take a look at it. And I worked with two women, and one of them's here tonight, and they're blessings in my life. My first girl, we did step two, you know. Came to believe the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Came to believe. It doesn't say what you need to believe in, you know. It just leaves it open. It is so easy, you know. It's like, yeah, I can believe this. I want to. I'm willing, you know. And just that little bit of willingness starts to allow me to get out of the driver's seat and into the unfolding process. I love this. I don't need to... You know, I don't need to go fix this over here. I need to grow into something new. And those are the kinds of visualizations that come to me when I'm working with these women. And we're equals, you know. I don't believe in the pigeon theory. I'm sorry if you guys call your people pigeons. I will never call my women pigeons ever. Because you know, we're equals. They absolutely give me as much, if not more, than I ever give them. And they help me refocus and recalibrate and become a better person. So step two was the one, and then the step six, we worked on step six, you know, all the character defects, and we got to review those again, you know, sloth, envy, jealousy, all the different, the things that we all do, you know, and so funny how you go into that stuff I did, and I'm like, oh, I only have this and this and this, you know, I don't have this and this and this. And my sponsor, Becky, she'd given me like three worksheets, you know, well, these are all the different character defects. Now, why don't you go through those and decide, you know, which ones you've got? So I went back to her house, and I've got, you know, like four or five of them marked. And she's like, oh, really? And then, you know, she took me through them. And then we kind of reviewed them again, you know, and I went, oh, shit, you know, bummer, dude. So there are all kinds of surprising, wonderful things that happen. The other thing that I might mention that she gave me was something wonderful. She gave me an exercise, because I'm one of those people, can you imagine, I like to talk. Oh my God. And so I don't want to do the work, I just want to talk to you about it, right? And when you talk, you don't ever get any fucking resolution. Okay, you just talk about it. You go in circles. That's what we did in my family, okay? We just talked about it. And so I remember talking to her about something, and she said, Susie, stop. I'm like, well, but he was such an asshole, and can you believe that she did this to me? And she goes, Susie, stop and sit down. You know, she used to tell me, when you get into these angry, crazy places, you know, she said, go run into the bathroom, see a stop sign, pull your pants down, and start writing. Can you believe that? That's what she told me. I'm like, I'm sure I'm going to do that. But anyway, she said, stop, I want you to start writing. And then she made me sit down. She made me write the situation. She did a little mini fourth step on me. And she said, I don't want to hear it until you've had a chance to process it and we can talk about it reasonably. And so I sat down and I went ahead and did the little mini. You know, what happened, how it made me feel, what it reminded me of, you know, what my part in it was. And then she added another part, you know, what do you like about this person? Nothing. what do you dislike about this person? Everything. Okay, now, what do they have in both of those categories that you have in common? What do you have in common with these people? And that was a wonderful exercise. I would recommend that, you know, because I went back there and I just went, oh my God, you know, I've got a lot in common. In fact, you know, I happen to believe what he thinks about me, about myself. Okay, that's where the bottom line is, okay. So what kind of message am I sending out there that's in reinforcing whatever it is that they're, you know what I mean? You put yourself in these situations, a work environment, you know, and I'm not an engineer. They were trying to make me an engineer, right? And then I'm pissed off at him because he doesn't think I'm an engineer, right? It makes sense, doesn't it? I don't want to I'm not schooled for engineering. Anyway, I digress. See, this is why I tried to make notes tonight, so that I could stay on track. But it's like putting needles in my eyes to do that kind of work. And what it did is it made me realize that that was my blessing. I didn't have to go on in that role as an engineer. And even though I got laid off at the time, you know, I found something better and it worked out for me. And I still paid the bills and took care of my kids. So that's a wonderful thing that I learned, you know, from her and the power of forgiveness. And I don't know how, it's not easy to forgive, you know, and I don't know that I'm really very, very stellar at it, but I'm going to keep trying. You know what I mean? There's some things that are hard to forgive, and myself first, and others too. But I don't think anybody's done anything to hurt me on purpose. And if they have, well, then fuck them. No, no, they'll get theirs, won't they, with karma? I know they will. I know I always get it every time I do something like that. Let me see here. Okay. What I do, I want to say a little bit about, you know, what I do is... I get up every morning. I have a very spiritual program. I was told to do a few things, okay? I was told to go to a step meeting. I was told to go to a big book study. I was told to go to a women's meeting if possible, absolutely. You know, our women save your ass, men pat your ass type of a deal, ladies. And then I also was told to do some spiritual discovery. And that was an important part of my program, and I've done it, and I've done a lot of research into meditation and prayer, and I've done the Zen Center, and I've studied Pema Chodra, and I love Deepak Chopra, and my spirituality is gigantic. I love it. It's so all-encompassing, and it's not limited or small, and so it just helps me. And for any of you that, you know, aren't able to do what they say in the book, you know, which is to, you know, latch on to whatever it is that your religion is, this helped me, and it made me a bigger, better person. It made me a person that didn't say, oh, my way's right and your way's wrong. You know, it says we're all right. I love what they talk about in the Zen Center, and the reason I bring this up is because, you know, we fight with our ego. Every day and every morning when I get up to do prayer and meditation, and I do it every day, and I light my candle, and I circle myself with love and light, you know, I try to remember to, I just forgot what I was going to say. Okay, anyway, I got off on this other tangent over here. I'm multitasking. But I'll try to remember it in a second. So anyway, I get up every morning and I go to this place, And I, you know, what I do is I do what my sponsor instructed me to do. Is we went through the steps, we went through the whole book, we outlined all the chapters that were the important parts. She showed me all the steps inside the book, and as we went through the steps, I started adding things into my prayer and meditation in the morning. I added the third step prayer, and I've had a reason to change it up a little bit so that it can be a little more all-encompassing for me. And it's just, you know, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of the ego self, that I may better do thy will and be conscious and present in this moment, mind and body in the same place. And then, you know, take away my difficulties, that victory over them will bear witness to those I will help, you know, da 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 da. You know, so that's my third step prayer. And then I do the seventh step prayer, which is, you know, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good or bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defective character. Sometimes I add in there that's out of balance. It stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellow. Grant me strength as I go out from here. And then I go into this place where, which is great, that I've learned from some of my other spirituality, where I just bring in all the light, you know, and I allow it to come in, you know, to and through me and around me and guide, guard, and protect me and those that I touch. And this spiritual part of my life is, it's on fire. You know, it's on fire for me today, and it keeps me afloat. It keeps me afloat. And then from there, you know, I pray to live my life and allow the money and the resources to flow in to support my living today. I was told one time by a dear mentor, she said, Susie, you live for money. You know, that's why your life is so such a struggle, you know. And so you need to change that dynamic up, you know. And so the funny thing is like, isn't it funny? This year, you know, and here I am, I'm being a victim, sorry. But I lost my home. I lost all my equity. And I was told by a great teacher, she was a medicine woman. She said, you got to be willing to have nothing. To start fresh and renew many times in your life, you know. And I thought, that's bullshit. I'm never going to do that. There's no way. I work hard. I deserve to have some luxuries in my life. So anyway, here I am, okay? And it's 2010, and I've got this great hope and faith that life is going to work out for me today. And I'm losing my house, and I'm okay with it. It's like I'm not shackled with that problem anymore, that $3,500 payment. That's a lot, okay? Maybe you guys can afford that. I can't. and I'm okay with that today. And I lost my job. Oh, shit. You know, I have 4 months of severance, and I got a tax return, and you know what I'm doing? I'm going to Europe. And I'm going to go out on a vision quest. And I'm going to go walk from France to Spain. And I'm going to take a route. It's called the Camino, and it's a pilgrimage. And Tony told me there are banditos on the road, and I better watch out for them. So I'm a little nervous now. No, I'm not nervous. But anyway, I'm taking my backpack and myself, and I'm taking this trip. And I could never do any of this unless I was sober. My daughter lives with my ex-husband today, and you know, they're working their relationship out, and they're helping one another out, and I'm free of both of them. It's really good. I know, I never say that. I thought, well, at first I'm like, oh my God, because socialization, right? You've got to be a good mother. You've got to be a good, how could you possibly let your daughter go live with your husband, you know, who's been challenged by certain things this last year, blah, 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 you know. And I finally let go of it, you know, let go or be dragged. I'm bloody and bruised right now, I let it go. And I'm going to go do this trip, and I'm so damn excited. To get back on track, you know, I'm starting a new adventure. I'm recreating myself at 47. I haven't really started dating yet, but I might venture out into that world, maybe a little bit. And I'm going to go walk 500 miles. So I want you to know that today, money and status don't give me happiness. I know that, and it doesn't keep me sober. But if I'm sober, I have a shot at life. I have a shot at, you know, solving my issues and challenges, because I know it'll pass and it'll change, because it always does. And so when you feel like your ass has fallen off and you just can't do one more thing, then just remember that it'll change in 10 minutes or an hour or tomorrow morning, and you'll get a new perspective on it if you want to. Now, you might want to stay in the shit, because I did that for a long time, too, where you just stay in the shit and go, oh, I'm in the shit, I'm so pissed off, I'm just angry. You know, you're spinning, you're going out of control, and all of a sudden then you go, wow, you know, I really don't need to do that. Maybe I could just step over here and see it from a different perspective. And you do, and the world changes, and it's lighter, and it's happier, and it's not so goddamn serious, you know. My biggest problem in life is me, and how seriously I take myself. And if I look back on all the silly shit that goes on in my life, you know, then I can take lighter steps throughout the day, you know, because it's really funny when you look at it all. I mean, I'm going to write a book, I think. Anyway, I think that's it. So, here's to living life on life's terms, allowing pain to be the touchstone for growth and new perspectives, because that's truly what it takes, you know, to make this life of ours work. And I thank you. I hope that I've helped somebody. I was told too that you just have to get up and tell your story, and that somebody might get something from it, and someone might not, and someone might not like you, but it's not none of your goddamn business. So anyway, namaste. I love you.